It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And for the last part of our program today, we're going to be talking about chocolate, more specifically the history of it and how it turned into the global force it remains today. There's a team of researchers at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom focusing on that subject for the next few years. That work's going to be led, as it happens, by a scholar based right here in Illinois. Late last year, Catherine Sampeck was awarded the British Academy Global Professorship, which is worth nearly $1 million. She's my new best friend and a professor of anthropology at Illinois State University in Normal. She earned her bachelor's and master's degrees in the topic from the University of Chicago. Much of her work focuses on the cultural history of chocolate, specifically within Central America. We spoke with her late last year to learn more about what she was hoping to learn. Because our conversation is on tape, we are not going to be taking calls for this part of our show, but you can always let us know what you thought. The email address is talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is my conversation with Professor Catherine Sampeck. Welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for making the time to be with us.
Oh, I'm delighted. Thank you so much for inviting me, Brian.
All right, so I just want to begin by asking, how does one get interested in the study of chocolate as an academic subject?
As an academic subject, well, I would say that I actually, rather than seeking out chocolate, chocolate found me. Because I was.
That's my excuse every time as well.
Yes, exactly. And I was looking for a really great research situation. I'm an archaeologist by training, and I was very interested in looking at what was happening in a region of Latin America before any kind of colonial interaction, and then how encountering Europeans and all of the economic and political and social changes affected one region, and using archaeology, so remains of day-to-day life, as well as documentary sources. And I found out that this region of Western El Salvador was really a great situation, had not seen a lot of research. And so I went there, and lo and behold, it was the center of, it was really the origin place of chocolate. The heartland was devoted to growing cacao, and all of the documents and the archaeology have supported that and given this picture over very, like the long history of chocolate, so to speak.
Well, then let's say more about that then. What do we know about how chocolate begins and where it began?
It seems to be that so chocolate's made from the seeds of a tropical tree called cacao, and it's an understory tree that is a little kind of finicky. And so it seems that the first domestication of cacao happened probably in northern Amazonia, and then some cacao is then reaches Mexico and Central America around probably 4,000 years ago. And then when it reaches Mexico and Central America, it really blossoms into lots of different varieties and becomes part of those cultures there, and as parts of ceremonies and feasts and all. There's very long history and a kind of a diverse history of using cacao in lots of different ways.
What is an early cacao fruit, you know, or an early chocolate experience, if we can call it that? How does that differ from, say, a Hershey bar?
There's a common thread as far as the flavor's concerned, because the seed of the cacao seed has that sort of chocolatey based taste. But then the very first preparations, and we're seeing this from evidence of the kinds of ceramic vessels that these residues are in, that have the chemical signatures basically for cacao. They're these tall necked bottles that look very much like a nice wine bottle or something. And so the idea is that rather than something that would be kind of like hot chocolate, it was a fermented drink made from the fruit more so than the seeds. And the fruit ferments really easily, and I think that was an attraction to cacao in the first place. And then that fermentation also helps, makes it easier to remove the seeds, and then those seeds also develop their flavor from that fermentation. And then it
Interesting.
changes along the way. In about 1900 BC, in Mexico and Central America, you see a different kind of ceramic vessel that still has those chemical traces of cacao in it. And it looks very much like a teapot. It's a sort of rounded vessel with this upright spout, and in its a different archaeologists interpret that as a different kind of culinary experience, a different kind of social experience, because instead of drinking a wine bottle from a wine bottle and maybe a person alone doing that, these teapot or sort of teapot looking vessels, upright spouted vessels, are for serving lots of people and making something that's it's a larger amount that's for sort of a social sharing. And then the flavors are still something that we're investigating, but it's really clear when look, I've done a lot of work looking at early colonial documents that describe how these different drinks and foods tasted, and then also very early colonial sort of recipes for different preparations, and there was a really wide variety. I would call it even a like a geography of chocolate, of cacao, and different seasonings, different flavors, different even varieties that were prized that had different tastes to them. Some of them very, quite sweet, some of them spicy, others sort of savory. And it was just, it was a way for each region to sort of stand out in its own way, have their own local version.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Catherine Sampeck, a professor of anthropology at Illinois State University and also recipient of the British Academy Global Professorship. She's part of a team that is going to be studying chocolate at the University of Reading in the United Kingdom over the next 4 years. Let me ask you then, so that's sort of the early indigenous history. We know it spreads through colonialism. How do we get to where we are today, where chocolate has this perception as a, you know, sweet, a sensual thing, maybe even a little sinful? It's associated with women, again, as a stereotype. Talk more about that.
Yes, well, it's I see all of those different meanings and associations with chocolate as legacies of this the colonial changes. You know, some of it is indigenous values and ways of doing things that are still part of what we enjoy today. So prizing, fermenting, the very careful sort of processing that has to happen to make something like chocolate is we're basically doing those same steps that people in Mexico and Central America did centuries ago. And then the twist is, and a lot of people like to think, oh, well, it was all spicy or it wasn't sweet. And there are, in fact, these Maya texts that describe sweet cacao. This is basically, this is my cup for sweet cacao. So they played with the flavors and the textures and the foods and drinks quite a bit. And that happens also, so Europeans encountering this substance and this food, this drink, become enchanted with it and do the same kind of creative tinkering you might think of. But that's actually sort of a slow development, because in some ways the first way that they were enchanted by cacao was as money, and it was used as a currency. And this region where I worked in El Salvador was one of, like, you could think of it as the one of the four main banks in all of Mexico and Central America. And people were buying things with it. They were paying for goods and services. It was circulating widely, and the Spanish adopt it just right away. It becomes legal tender. And so Spaniards come to this region of El Salvador because it's the place that money grows on trees. And because of that attraction, they also learned to love the local drink, which was called chocolate. And in Mexico, other parts of Mexico and Central America, they had different names, different recipes, and so forth. And then it also, so it becomes associated with luxury, I mean, immediately, because it really is sort of liquid capital. And then it also becomes very quickly associated with corruption, because a lot of the Spaniards and officials involved with this cacao trade were seen as quite dubious in their business dealings. The treatment of those Spaniards of the indigenous people who were managing the farming and producing incredible amounts. I mean, this is enough to circulate throughout Mexico, Central America, and then into Europe from this tiny little area in El Salvador. They were seen as quite, like, there was a sort of sinfulness that was potentially associated with it because of all sort of sketchy characters. And then finally, it was such an unusual substance for European experience with food and drinks that they couldn't decide whether it was a food or a drink. It was so substantial. And so it was seen as potentially sinful because you might be breaking the ecclesiastical fast. And so you could be committing a sin by drinking chocolate while you're waiting for mass to finish. So
the sinfulness is not a new idea either. I suspect you and I could spend probably a week or a month's worth of shows on what you know about chocolate. But in the minute, unfortunately, the minute or so we have remaining, what is it that you don't know? What are you hoping to learn in the next few years?
Oh, it's how, so it's sort of like trying to say that the baguette is everything about French cuisine. And so what this project is putting chocolate in its bigger context of, I have lots of evidence, archaeological and documentary evidence of the culinary world of this region of El Salvador, and then how that intersects with European cuisine and other regions of the world. And so it's just looking at how and when chocolate is born, and then how it changes over time. And so part of this is getting direct evidence of residues, and then also really integrating all the different strands of evidence that that I've collected over the years.
Well, it sounds fascinating. I hope we can have you back in the months and years ahead to talk about where the research is going. Professor Catherine Sampick from Illinois State University, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Next time I'll bring some chocolate.
Oh, that would be amazing. Catherine Sampack is professor of anthropology at Illinois State University and a recipient of the British Academy Global Professorship. I first spoke with her earlier this year. And that is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the recent string of shootings in downstate Illinois, particularly pegged to one that happened recently in Peoria. But this is a problem that also affects Rockford and Champaign-Urbana and Springfield and Decatur and Danville and other downstate communities as well. We're going to be taking a look at that problem. Plus, we'll hear a preview of the upcoming Public Radio Prison Cast, a radio broadcast aimed for people inside of Illinois' prisons and their family members on the outside as well. You can get a podcast of this program by going to wherever you listen. We're on Spotify, Apple. Just search for The 21st Show. And you can find a link to that in all of our past segments on our website, which is 21stshow.org. Let us know what you think by emailing talk@21stshow.org. We love hearing about what you think about what we've been talking about, and we appreciate suggestions for future topics. Again, the email address is talk@21stshow.org. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vinson, and Jose Zepeda. Our intern is Nick Boyven. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We will talk with you again tomorrow.